On Tech News Today, Microsoft gives pricing on its Surface Hub. We'll tell you the untold story about how this product came into existence. Plus, Apple Music is being investigated for violating antitrust laws, and YouTube gets 8K video. It's all coming up next on Tech News Today.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for Tech News Today is provided by CashFly at CacheFly.com.
This is Tech News Today for Wednesday, June 10th, 2015. This episode is brought to you by ZipRecruiter. Are you hiring? With ZipRecruiter.com, you can post to 100-plus job sites, including social networks, all with a single click. Screen, rate, and hire the right candidates fast. Try ZipRecruiter with a free 4-day trial now at ZipRecruiter.com/TNT. And by Prosper. Prosper is a peer-to-peer lending marketplace that connects people who are looking to borrow money with those who have money to lend. Visit prosper.com/twit and receive a $50 Visa gift card when you get a loan. Tech News Today is the show where we talk about the tech news with the journalists who report it. Welcome to the show. My name is Mike Elgin, and our co-anchor today is ZNet contributing writer Kevin Toefel. Welcome to you, Kevin Toefel.
Hey, Mike. Good to be here, as always, in the midpoint of the tech week.
Yeah, it's hump day here in the land of technology and the broadcast technology broadcasting capital of the universe, Petaluma, California. Kevin, you wrote a really interesting piece this week about Apple Music, and you grudgingly admitted that it was disruptive, but the thing about it that was disruptive was a big surprise. Can you talk a little bit about that column?
Sure. I'm still digesting, like most of us, all the WWDC announcements, but Apple's music service was the one big thing that they held back to the end. And a lot of people, you know, walked away saying, well, it's just another music service. There's really not that much different here. But I do see some disruption in a way that only Apple can actually do, and that is in the pricing structure. It is $9.99 per month for subscribers per person, but they do have a family plan for $14.99 that includes six people. That's kind of a descendant from the old Beats Music, which had an AT&T exclusive that I took advantage of, five people for $14.99. Everybody else has family plans, but typically if you have more than two people, you're going to spend more because they tend to give you 50% off for each additional person. So I'm waiting to see the disruption in terms of pricing here to see what the others do.
Yeah, and of course, lots of these companies have been coming out of the woodwork in the last year or so. And so I think in general, there's going to be downward pressure on pricing, kind of like it has in the has happened in the cloud services market. The difference is, of course, is that the labels are going to be trying to keep those prices up. And so there'll be a contest there between how low these can go and Hollywood is going to try to keep them from going lower. I think another potential disruption, although it's very potential, is what you might call Ping for celebrities. It's their Connect service where they're going to have, provide access to artists, both the big ones and small ones, up and comers as well. I think they think that is going to be a differentiator. I don't think the DJ thing is going to be a big deal. I mean, that seems like kind of an antiquated notion. I could be wrong about that as well. Maybe that's what the world wants is DJs and 24/7 radio. But we'll see how that plays out. But I can't wait to see this thing launch. We also have another story related to Apple Music coming up in just a sec. But first, let's get to our top story. Microsoft unveiled its Windows 10-based Surface Hub conference room system back in January, and this morning revealed more details. The product comes in two versions. The 84-inch 4K Surface Hub retails for $19,999, basically $20,000, while the 55-inch 1080p version costs $6,999. These are going to be sold through resellers. So you'll have to contact them. Microsoft won't sell them directly through their stores or anything like that. Now, the product goes on pre-order July 1st and ships in September, according to Microsoft. The system has two wide-angle HD cameras, an array of microphones and other sensors, and enables touch input from up to 100 fingers at a time and up to three pens simultaneously, and the systems ship with two pens. The development of the Surface Hub has been years in the making, and Microsoft's been highly secretive about the project. This morning, however, Fast Company's Harry McCracken revealed how the Surface Hub came to be, and he joins us now. Welcome to you, Harry McCracken.
Hey, Mike. It's great to be with you.
Great. I'm glad you're here. Now, before we get into your story, what is your overall opinion on the Surface Hub as a product?
Well, they're definitely trying to fix a problem which exists. When conference rooms have PCs, they tend to be a pain. They're locked up. You don't know the password. Connecting laptops to a projector fails an amazingly high percentage of the time. If you're in a remote office, it's really hard to participate in meetings somewhere else. And the Surface Hub attempts to address all of these issues.
Hey, Harry, it's Kevin. Always good to see you, and I appreciate your sharing the view of your igloo there. Quick question for you. You talk about what the Surface Hub is going to do. I mean, how does it really compare with existing products? Because really, this isn't the first type of product to try and bring in-office collaboration. There are products from InFocus and Clary Icon, but how does it really compare to those?
Well, this one seems quite a bit more sophisticated technology-wise. It uses an optically bonded capacitive touchscreen. So basically very similar technology to an iPhone or a Surface tablet, except much, much larger, which led Microsoft to decide that the best way to make this was to manufacture them itself at a factory near Portland. The big one is a 4K screen. Microsoft was able to do something which those other companies weren't, which was to get the Windows team and the Office team developing software designed for these large screens. So, it's not just a hardware challenge, it's also a software one. The products you mentioned actually still run Windows 7. This is the first product of this type designed with Windows 10 in mind. So similar idea, I think quite a bit more sophistication from a technology standpoint.
Now, the story of the Surface Hub, as you went into detail in your article, begins with Jeff Hahn. Can you tell us about who Jeff Hahn is and where he comes from and what he has done?
Well, back in 2005, Jeff Hahn was researching multi-touch input before the iPhone was announced. So people didn't know that term and they didn't even understand the concept. And in 2006, he did a TED Talk, which was one of the first TED Talks to go viral, where he did things like pinching and zooming photographs, which today, are kind of humdrum. Everybody knows about that. And in 2006, it blew people away. And he started a company called Perceptive Pixel, which Microsoft acquired in 2012. And he's not the only person at Microsoft doing this. It really is sort of a cross-company initiative. But they took his technology for doing big screen, multi-touch, and it was sort of the foundation from a hardware standpoint of what they're doing. I went to Wilsonville, which is where they're building these in Oregon, and got to spend some time with him talking about his vision, which he's had for a decade. And Surface Hub is sort of the clearest, most ambitious incarnation of what he's been trying to do for a long time.
Harry, you said you got to actually go to Wilsonville, Oregon. What was it like in there and what they're trying to create here with Surface Hub?
Well, it was pretty cool because I got to see them building these things. And technologically, it's kind of similar to building an iPhone screen or an iPad screen or a Surface tablet screen, except they're working with these massive 84-inch panels. And they have to layer on these touch layers, which are kind of on these big saran wrap like rolls. And if you've ever tried to do something like put a screen on top of your iPhone to protect it, you know how hard it is even at that size to do that without messing it up and getting little bubbles. Microsoft has to do this on these huge screens. It's really hard. They build all this custom machinery and gigantic robotic arms to hoist stuff up. It's really a fascinating experience to actually see that stuff. And one little speck of dust could mess it all up. So I had to put on one of these bunny suits, these clean room uniforms, in order to go in.
Now, Harry, a lot of people don't realize this, but Oregon is the sort of hotbed for this kind of technology. For example, Polycom, which I believe is based in San Jose, acquired the assets of HP's visual collaboration business and its Halo products, and those were developed in Corvallis, Oregon. InFocus, which is another product that competes, as you mentioned, with the Surface Hub, their monopad product, they're based in Portland, Oregon. What is it about Oregon that attracts this kind of business, this kind of technology? That's the first part of my question. And the second part of the question is, why aren't they making this thing in China like everybody else?
Well, the Portland area actually has a long history of technology, and a lot of it relates to display stuff. Going back to the 1940s, when this company called Tektronix was founded, Tektronix made lab equipment and still does. That involved a lot of technology relating to displays, and a bunch of spin-offs, including InFocus, were founded by Tektronix folks. And so Perceptive Pixel, Jeff Hahn's company, went to Portland originally to take advantage of that display engineering know-how. In terms of why it's not made in China and is not made by a third party, basically, so much of what Microsoft is doing is new that they can't just go to a factory at some place like Foxconn, where they're building something similar, and take advantage of the economies of scale of doing that. They had to design their own equipment, and they decided it just, you know, once you've designed that equipment, it makes sense to just run it. And they do say that if at some point Surface Hub becomes a big deal and scales up, and they're building them by the million, they might, you know, go somewhere else for that. But right now, they're in Portland. They're in the same building as the hardware engineers. So as the guys who engineered it have issues, they can just walk over to the manufacturing line, which is something you can't accomplish when you outsource it to another continent.
Harry, all this research, development, investment really leads to another question in my mind. When I look at the Surface products, which are, you know, Microsoft built and sold, you've got a consumer aspect to them with Surface, Surface Pro. You also have the enterprise aspect for Surface Pro in the workplace. This is clearly a big enterprise play, I would assume, probably digital media as well. I also remember, though, that the original Surface, Microsoft took a $900 million inventory hit because it didn't pan out so well. And it seems to me like they're taking a really big risk here in terms of the investment and the cost. Would you agree with that, or do you think they're onto something here?
I mean, I think it has the potential to do well, but you know, Microsoft's history of getting the world excited about new categories in hardware and actually having them pay off on the scale that the company expects has not been great. I think this is a little different because this is so purely an enterprise product. You're not going to see this at the Microsoft store. I imagine you will not see this advertised on TV. They're going through the kind of companies that sell equipment to large companies for conference rooms, which I think is smart because big companies actually do spend quite a bit on technology for conference rooms. And the Surface Hub is sort of a Swiss Army knife. It can potentially replace multiple products, which would cost more. So I'm not confident saying this is clearly going to be a huge business for them, but I think it's a little bit more specific. They seem to be going about it in an intelligent way, and at least the opportunity exists, and it's not reacting to the iPad in the way that Microsoft's acquiring Nokia was a response to the iPhone, and the Surface tablet was a response to the iPad. This actually is trying to make a somewhat small category large, and Microsoft seems to be as good a place as anybody to do it.
Yeah, that's a great point. This is a rare case in recent years where Microsoft is ahead of the curve. They're reinventing something that's very important to businesses, essentially how conference rooms work. They have a product that's very beautiful. I mean, it's just breathtaking to look at and it's super easy to use. I think they're really onto a hit. That's just my opinion. I want to thank you, Harry, for writing such a great story about this because, of course, they come out of left field with this product. And it's great to know where it came from, how it relates to Perceptive Pixel and all the rest. And you pretty much answered all the questions I was having about this whole product. Harry McCracken is at FastCompany.com and also Technologizer.com. And he's coming to us from the Fast Company Biodome. I want to thank you for that. And you can also follow him on Twitter at Harry McCracken. Harry, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thanks so much, Mike.
All right. We got more news for you in just a minute, but first let's talk about ZipRecruiter, one of our sponsors today. ZipRecruiter is going to help you hire the greatest person you can possibly hire for your next position, whether you own a small business or whether you have a department where you have to staff it with good people. If you hire the wrong person, it's going to be a real bummer, I got to tell you. And if you hire the right person, life is going to be good for you because you're going to succeed in your goals. ZipRecruiter lets you hire the right person by enabling you to post to 100 or more job sites with a single click. And those include social networks, including LinkedIn groups, Facebook pages, and regular profile postings as well. You can even automatically tweet your job postings over Twitter. They'll also instantly match you to candidates from over 4 million resumes in their gigantic resume database. ZipRecruiter is used by more than 400,000 businesses, and you'll find out why when you try it because it's so easy to use. And you can try it for free. You can try it for 4 days for free, and that's enough time for you to actually make a hire. And we're using it right now for a video editor post. We love ZipRecruiter. It really helps us hire the right person. And again, TWiT really needs good people because each of us does a lot of different stuff. We don't have the space as a small company for dead wood, as it were. So we hire great people. We do it through ZipRecruiter. Try ZipRecruiter with a free 4-day trial now and get your perfect candidate before they go to your competition. Just go to ZipRecruiter.com/TNT. Remember that, ZipRecruiter.com/TNT. Apple's Worldwide Developers Conference is still going on, and already Apple is being scrutinized by the Attorneys General of New York and Connecticut over its Apple Music service. Lucas Shaw is an entertainment reporter for Bloomberg and joins us now. Welcome to you, Lucas.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Now, what are the attorneys general investigating exactly? What aspect of Apple Music is a potential antitrust violation?
They are investigating, much like the FTC is investigating, these attorneys general want to know kind of whether Apple is using its scale and power to get favorable deals from the record labels, because Apple could buy all three record labels, you know, for the cost of making a few iPods.
Lucas, do we know who exactly is involved here in terms of accusing Apple of potential misconduct? Is it the record labels themselves or specific record labels? Is it Apple's competitors in this space, which actually we were just talking about at the top of the show, the Spotify's, Ardeos and such, or is it somebody else?
In more likely competitors than the labels. Most of the labels believe that these investigations are perfunctory and that they won't go anywhere. In the case of this one, some of the labels haven't even been contacted by the parties involved. At least I know that Warner Music has not been. And so there's long been speculation that Spotify is trying to cause Apple as many headaches as possible. Because those in the world of a la carte streaming, where you can pick whatever you want to listen to, Spotify is the established player right now, and just this morning announced that it now has more than 75 million users, more than 20 million of whom pay for a subscription. But Apple is the most sincere threat to date, because while RDO and Rhapsody and some of those other services were very early to the game, none of them have the kind of customer base that poses any threat to Spotify. Now whether Spotify has a hand in the state-specific ones, you know, I don't have the reporting to make such a claim. I can say that a lot of people in the music industry have speculated that Spotify has a hand in some of this.
Lucas, how is this likely to affect users? I mean, is this going to delay or change Apple Music in any way?
I would be surprised. You know, if they were to uncover something, then it could. But as far as anyone knows, you know, this new Apple Music service will be available at the end of the month. And, you know, most of these investigations, whether it's in Europe or the FTC or now these state-level ones, haven't come up with anything that would cripple it. They've just said that they're looking into it. They haven't said that they found anything.
Lucas, this is all happening pretty quickly, considering Apple Music was just announced less than 48 hours ago. So has Apple actually made any kind of response or anything to these claims, or have they said anything at all yet?
The investigation actually predates the announcement of the service. As based on what I was told, the investigation from New York and Connecticut dates to around the same time or a little bit after the FTC, which is a month ago, a month and a half. It just happened to become public yesterday, which, you know, the timing of which would suggest that it's someone who's trying to cause some headaches for Apple. Apple's issued no public statement on this matter. They didn't with the FTC either. I think they're just hoping that it'll go away.
Lucas Shaw is at Bloomberg.com, and you can follow him on Twitter at Lucas_Shaw. Thanks for joining us, Lucas.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
All right. YouTube now supports not 4K, but 8K video, even though few cameras can shoot it and few computers can watch it. Tom Maxwell wrote about the story for 9to5 Google and joins us now. Welcome, Tom.
Thanks for having me.
Now, Google has a different timeline for 8K videos on YouTube than evidence suggests. When does Google say 8K video hit YouTube, and when do they say the labeling for it on the site exists, you know, so that you can actually choose the resolution?
Sure. So back on Sunday, a video showed up on YouTube called Ghost Towns in 8K by a tips and tricks channel for video producers. And what was noticeable and what Reddit users picked up was that there's a new label in the video quality settings where you could choose 4320p, which is the standard vertical resolution for 8K video. We contacted Google about it, and they essentially said that since July 2010, when they supported 4K video, which is lower, about 372 vertical pixels, is when they also supported 8K. But essentially, it's only up until recently that 8K cameras have been coming on the market. There are only four or five. Red has one that's coming out later in the year, starting at around $20,000, so pretty expensive still. But what's most notable about this is that it actually ties into Google's Project Jump, which is an open source spec for VR cameras. And essentially, what the belief is that the more pixels that you add and the more you double pixels in video, the closer we get to VR video that's essentially pixel-free when you look at it from the eyes. So that's sort of why it's notable.
Tom, the virtual reality aspect actually does make sense to me, because as I sit here and think, they've got 8K video. How many TVs and computer monitors are there that can actually show these things? I mean, I can't really think of many, none off the top of my head. I mean, does it even make sense for them to do this otherwise?
Yeah, so it's definitely a chicken and egg problem, as I sort of said in the article. If there's no content, people are less encouraged to buy the hardware. And if there's less hardware that supports the video, there's less need for the software online. And YouTube's always been sort of ahead of the curve. Again, when they released 4K videos in 2010, again, nobody could support that. And even TV manufacturers are shooting for 2017 to make 4K the standard on television. So there's still not a whole lot of use on it. But back in 2013, Palmer Luckey from Oculus sort of said that 8K is the closest thing we have right now to pixel-free VR, and that's really what the goal is, to get two 8K video streams for both eyes is the goal right now. But even further than that, if we get even higher resolution than that, it would be more of a better for pixel-free VR.
Can't wait till something I own can watch 8K video. It sounds intriguing. For now, it's kind of an abstraction to me and to all of us, really. Tom Maxwell is at 9to5 Google. You can also find him at 9to5 Mac, and you can also find him on Twitter at Tom Maxwell. Thanks for joining us today, Tom.
Thanks.
Well, TiVo has launched a new service called TiVo Online, which enables anyone with an internet connection to search for TV shows and movies and find out when and where they're playing. That's right, you don't even need a TiVo subscription. David Katzmeier is a reviews section editor for CNET and joins us to talk about TiVo Online. Welcome to you.
How's it going, Mike?
It's going great, thanks. Now, will TiVo Online also let me search online sources like Amazon Prime Video or Hulu Plus or YouTube?
Yeah, you do get access to all of those services that, you know, TiVo currently offers. You're going to get YouTube results as well on there, in addition to Netflix, Amazon, Vudu, and Hulu Plus.
David, is there anything that TiVo subscribers can do above and beyond what non-subscribers can do with this new service?
Yes. Actually, it seems like it's more of a hook to get people that aren't TiVo subscribers to go ahead and check out TiVo, what it has to offer, and maybe pay their $15 a month to become a member and buy a box. So, a TiVo subscriber can do basically a lot of the stuff that was previously available on TiVo.com. Mainly that's scheduling your season passes, which they call One Pass now, and rearranging your DVR. You can delete stuff, you can add stuff. So that's the main functionality there. One of the big caveats is that it doesn't allow you to stream anything from one of your, outside the house streaming capable TiVo DVRs like the Romeo Plus and Romeo Pro. So that functionality is now still restricted to the apps that TiVo offers for Android and iOS.
Now, why are they doing this? Why are they extending any service at all beyond subscribers? Is this a sort of kind of freemium model where they want to get people to use it and then be enticed to upgrade into a subscription?
Yeah, I think that's part of it. I think, you know, TiVo's looking to get more recognition out there and compete against, you know, the big streaming names and the big aggregators. Roku comes to mind as a platform that does offer all these other, you know, apps as part of, you know, again, what TiVo's most known for, which is making your cable box recognizable and easy to use.
All right, David. Well, thank you so much for joining us. David Katzmeyer is at CNET.com, and you can follow him on Twitter at dkatzmeyer. Katzmeyer spelled K-A-T-Z-M-A-I-E-R. David, again, thank you so much for joining us today.
No problem. Thanks for the spelling.
You're welcome. Thank you for the spelling of your name. That wasn't easy. Apple has deployed a fleet of vans to canvas the streets of select cities in Ireland and the UK, as well as 13 American states, for a kind of street view feature for its Maps application, according to a story in the Guardian newspaper. The story also reported the existence of an Apple website providing some information about the initiative. The news follows sightings of a similar vehicle in San Francisco and also reports that Apple intended to photograph businesses for its map service. As with Google Street View, Apple says they'll blur faces and license plates. Kevin Toefel, does Apple seem like to you like the kind of company that's going to photograph every street or at least every business in much of the world? I mean, it seems like a very Googly thing to do and not a particularly Apple-y thing to do.
I would agree, but I would also say that as a result of the Google I/O developer event, as well as the following WWDC event that's going on right now, Apple and Google to me are getting to be more of the same than different these days. The key differentiator is Apple will say, we're collecting all this data and it will still be private and not sold to third parties. So currently Apple does get information for their maps from TomTom. I'm trying to figure out if they are going to add these street view-like views to Apple Maps in their own database and stop using TomTom, or they're going to supplement it. So I'm really not sure. I live in the sticks in Pennsylvania, so they're never going to come down my street. Google hasn't either, for that matter. So,
or you can go underwater. Google has underwater street view. So if you happen to be scuba diving in certain locations, you might end up on street view that way. Well, in related news, in other product update news, Google Maps has been letting Android users search for a specific place, then send it to their phones. It's a really cool feature. But now that, quote, send to device, unquote, feature is available to iPhone and iPad users. To enable it, you first have to enable notifications for Google Maps in settings, where a new send to device option should appear. Once that's enabled, the send to device feature will appear after you search Maps on the desktop. I'm totally confused, Kevin Toefel, as to why this wasn't there from the beginning. In fact, I think it used to be something like this used to be very possible in Google Maps, and I think it went away.
I know there have been similar features in the past. Android users have always had this. I know Apple Maps has its own way of doing so. But this is Google Maps on iOS. It's interesting to me that Google always finds a way to work around the iOS limitations that are put up by Apple. And in this case, they're doing this as a notification, which is kind of interesting to me. It's not, you know, app-to-app communication. It's just a notification that you would then get the place as a notification. You'd open it, and then in Maps, you would then have your destination available from the desktop. It's kind of an interesting workaround, as always.
Yeah, well, I'm looking forward to using it on my iPhone. Well, in other related news, Sony's PlayStation Now streaming service, which had previously been available only on Sony hardware, is now available on select Samsung smart TVs in the U.S. and Canada. If you own the right Samsung TV, you won't need a PlayStation console to play some PlayStation games. That's the bottom line. You will, however, still need to buy a DualShock 4 controller, or you're just going to be sitting on the couch watching this thing play by itself. Well, we have some more news for you in just a sec, but first let's talk about Prosper. Prosper is the modern way and the best way to borrow money. You can borrow up to $35,000 in as few as 5 days, and it's super, super easy. Just give some basic information about yourself on the Prosper.com website. You can check your rates and review your loan options. And then once lenders invest in your loan, that's right, it's an investment opportunity for investors. The money is deposited directly into your bank account. You can do all kinds of things with a Prosper loan. You can pay off high rate credit cards, fix up the house, put it into your business. You can buy a car. You can even finance environmentally friendly projects, which they call a green loan, always a great idea. And of course, you know, it's just the way to borrow money. And of course, don't put more money on your credit cards. You can pay off those credit cards instead. That's the way to go. You can check your low rate instantly without affecting your good credit score. Just go to prosper.com/twit. And now, for a limited time, Prosper is offering Twit viewers and listeners a $50 Visa gift card with your low interest loan. You can get up to $35,000 in your account in as few as 5 days, plus a $50 Visa gift card. Go to prosper.com/twit for this special offer just for Twit viewers and listeners. We thank Prosper for their support of Tech News Today. In the Human Resources Department, Glassdoor today released its CEO rankings, with Google CEO Larry Page coming out as the number one CEO in the United States. The rankings are determined by U.S.-based employees. They essentially vote. It's a popularity contest, essentially. Page rose from 10th place last year, which is the same place Apple CEO Tim Cook has this year. Only 15 of the top 100 CEOs run tech companies, so I guess tech company CEOs aren't really all that popular. Other notable appearances in technology are Facebook's Mark Zuckerberg at number 4 and Ultimate Software's Scott Scher at number 5.
I'd love to add one more highlight, because okay. I'm shocked, and actually I expect to see John Legere from T-Mobile there at number 14. Here's a guy who has shaken up the industry, turned his company around. Here in the U.S., T-Mobile is competing head-to-head with Sprint in terms of growing subscribers and having a large user base. If you've ever seen this guy talk, or you get the opportunity to see him talk, do so, although it will probably be profanity-laced. I will warn you in advance. But this is a guy who belongs on this list. I'm very, very nice to see it.
Yes, he of the pink T-shirts. He always wears a pink T-shirt no matter what. This is a Kool-Aid drinking CEO, which is probably the best kind. Well, we've got some big numbers for you today. 20 million, you heard that earlier in the show. 20 million is how many paid subscribers Spotify now claims. Now, that number has doubled in the past year. Last year, about around this time, they were claiming 10 million paid subscribers, which is actually a really good number in the streaming music business. They say that they also have a total of 55 million users who are active but not paid. So Spotify has very, very big numbers, and just in time for the coming Apple Music competition. Well, our TNT fan of the day is Bart Jefferson at Jefferson Security Systems, who posted this picture on Facebook. He's browsing sessions at Apple's Worldwide Developers Conference while listening to Tech News Today. Very nice. Yeah. So forget the Apple WWDC. You get a real education by watching and listening to this show. Show us how you watch or listen to TNT. Just record a video or take a picture of yourself or your setup and post it on Google+, Twitter, or Facebook, and use the hashtag #HowIWatchTNT so we can find it. Kevin Toefel, what are you working on these days, and where can people follow you?
Well, I'm not watching TNT in 8K, unfortunately, because I can't afford one of those TVs. But what I am working on is, again, digesting everything that's come out of Apple and Google, for that matter, for the last 2 weeks. But also, I am playing finally with my Pebble Time, which finally arrived. It was due to me late last week, but just came yesterday. And I have to say, forget the features for a second, it's the most comfortable smartwatch I've ever worn, and I've worn a number of them. So A+ on that.
Very nice. I can't wait to read your review and stuff like that on that watch. That's really great that it's really comfortable. I think that the Apple Watch is pretty comfortable, but I have the feeling that that one's even more so. So thank you so much for all the stuff you write. You're at Kevin C. Toefel on Twitter. And thanks again, Kevin. We'll see you next time.
Sounds great. Thanks.
All right. You can subscribe to Tech News Today on Feedly. You can choose another way to subscribe at twit.tv/TNT. Watch us live every weekday at 10 a.m. Pacific, 1700 UTC at live.twit.tv. You can follow us on Twitter and also on Facebook at the same name, Tech News Today TV. In the case of Facebook, just go to facebook.com/Tech News Today TV. You can follow me on all the social networks by going to my website, elgin.com. Also, don't miss Tech News Tonight at 4 p.m. Pacific tonight and every single weeknight. That, ladies and gentlemen, is the Tech News Today. This show is produced by Jason Cleanthes and edited by Anthony Nielsen. My name is Mike Elgin. Thanks for tuning in. We'll see you tomorrow.